Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to the Might is Right Network. Today is Tuesday, February 17th, 2015, and this is the Berserker Bastion. I am your host, Ruthless Rob, and to remind you, the Might is Right Network has live podcasts on Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday around 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. Monday, Valkyrie Underground. Tuesday, the Berserker Bastion. And Thursday, the Might is Right Power Hour. Between the live podcast at the Might is Right Network, we stream 24 hours a day some of the best material available, such as Dr. William Pierce, The Ghost Wolf, Terrible Tommy, Matt Hale, and numerous audiobooks chapter by chapter. We also stream some of the best music of the white race. If you have any suggestions to improve the network and our website, you may contact us at either the email address located at the bottom of the page or at the link that is located above on the right side, just to the right of the player. And the link says suggestions/complaints. And if you like the network, then a great way to help us out is to spread the link to the Might is Right Network around the internet. Tonight's topic is the Black Plague, but I'm going to talk about a variety of things. It's not just focused on that. And to remind everyone, there is no peaceful solution for any of our problems, so you might as well forget about it right here and now. And I'm going to read from Nature's Eternal Religion, which was written by Ben Klassen, and it was actually his last name is pronounced Clausen. I just wanted to say that. He pronounced it as Clausen. The book was published in 1973, and the title of Chapter 5 is The Black Plague, and at some point we will have to take the necessary action if the white race expects to survive. And to remind you of David Lane's 14 words, we must secure the existence of our people and a future for white children. And now I'll start. Chapter 5, and it was from Book 1, The Unavenged Outrage. And once again, it's the Black Plague in our midst. When I was a youngster, I used to refer to the black man by the term of nigger. At the time, this seemed like the natural, uninhibited term to use. As I became older, went through college, and was exposed to a liberal education and the mass media brain pollution programs, I changed to the more respectable term of Negro. Today, I am most emphatically again using the term nigger. In so doing, I have been rebuked and criticized by some people that this is being lowbrow, uneducated, crude. Nothing could be further from the truth. The fact is that I have passed through the nigger stage, the respectable Negro stage, and have finally advanced to the nigger designation again, because I have found from a lifetime of experience and from a lengthy study of the subject that the term nigger is by far the most correct and proper term to use. Furthermore, in looking up the word in Webster's dictionary, I found the term nigger very descriptive, a vulgar, offensive term of hostility and contempt for the black man. I can't think of anything that defines better and more accurately what our position toward a nigger should be than what the dictionary said. If we are going to be for racial integrity and racial purity and for supremacy of the white man, we should and we must take a hostile position toward the nigger. We must give him nothing but contempt. The black man is without a doubt the most dangerous creature on the face of the earth to the further survival of the white race. He is a danger that rivals that of the Jew himself, although for different reasons. Granted, the Jew is by far the greater overall danger in manipulating and destroying the white race. He could, however, never completely destroy the white race without the help of the nigger. The central aim and objective of the Jewish conspiracy is destroying white civilizations, always has been and always will be and is today. The pulling down of the white race, poisoning its blood, and mongrelizing it to become a mulatto race of bastards, which he can easily control. He knows very well that as long as the white race remains pure, there is always the danger that a sleeping giant can awaken, turn on him, and destroy him. One of the most infuriating con games the Jews play on the whites is to parade a mulatto, perhaps 7/8 white, on the TV screens as a typical black, whereas any intelligence such as a miserable mixed breed may have, undoubtedly comes from its predominantly white ancestry. Total credit is allotted to the mulatto as being black. In picking and choosing an unusual mulatto that is able to make a halfway decent presentation, the Jews thereby take the talent and ability derived from the white blood and use it to boost the stock of the niggers. A most shabby and treacherous deception, but most whites, unfortunately, have not caught on. If they were to expose a pure black African nigger, he would undoubtedly be too repulsive to sell to the American public. The Jews, therefore, use mulattoes extensively, not only half and half, but mulattoes with predominantly white ancestry. Most of the professional blacks, such as the late Congressman Adam Clayton Powell, have very little nigger blood in them, just enough to darken their skin. Thus equipped, they then become professional nigger promoters, displaying themselves as a typical nigger. The only reason they get away with this, of course, is because they have the full support of the Jewish news media behind them, giving them ample favorable exposure in 1,000 different ways. The black African represents the lowest scale in the human ladder. Throughout recorded history, over the last 6,000 years, the African has invented nothing. He has not even so much as invented the wheel, although he has had plenty of opportunity to observe from other nearby races the use of it. He has never domesticated a single animal. His only means of transporting goods has been the human head as a means of cartage. He has never progressed beyond the common mud hut as a means of shelter. He has never learned to read or write on his own. He has never produced a written language. Practically, the only trade he has ever indulged in is the trading of ivory, beads, and slaves. In other words, the sale and trading of his own kinsmen. He is shiftless, lazy, and dumb. The average pure black African nigger has an IQ about 40 points lower than the average white. This puts his average well below the moron class. The average American nigger, having assimilated a large quantity of white blood and actually being a mulatto, has a somewhat higher IQ, somewhere at approximately 80, a good 20 points below the average white. This puts him just on the borderline of the moron classification, with a large percentage being actually in the moron category. The nigger is, however, tough, and he is prolific in producing more niggers. For all the above reasons mentioned, he has been well adapted for slave labor under the direction of a superior race. But for the same reasons, he is very useful and a dangerous tool in the hands of the Jew, and an extremely dangerous threat to the white race. The Founding Fathers, when they wrote the Declaration of Independence, inserted in it a glaring error, an error that has lived to haunt us ever since. In a burst of generosity that was exceeded perhaps only by stupidity, they magnanimously inserted into the Declaration that much heralded phrase, "All men are created equal." We can be sure that the hand of the Jew was involved in this perversion of the facts of life. We can be sure the Founding Fathers themselves did not believe it. They themselves owned numerous slaves, and when a dozen years later they wrote the Constitution, they gave the coloreds a voting value of 3/5. But even this they did not give to the niggers themselves, but to each state as a whole in calculating the respective representation in Congress. The Jew has made much of that treacherous phrase, ignoring the fact that the Founding Fathers did not grant citizenship nor voting rights to the niggers. They owned them as slaves and considered them as chattel. Today we hear that same statement, that all men are created equal, dinned into our ears again and again over television, over radio, and in the newspapers, and by means of every other Jewish communication medium. Being hammered into our brains day after day, the young people especially are beginning to believe it. The objective of the Jews, of course, is to get us to accept the niggers as our equal, get us to intermarry. They want to mongrelize the white race and to pull it down to somewhere near the shameful level of the jungle-dwelling cannibals themselves. It has been said, and rightly so, you can take the nigger out of the jungle, but you can't take the jungle out of the nigger. This is an eternal truth of nature. Every species is designed to live in its own rightful element. A fish out of water would be as much out of place as a polar bear transplanted to the jungles of the tropics. A beaver is an expert at building dams, but it cannot fly like an eagle nor build a nest like an eagle. Conversely, an eagle cannot possibly live the life of a beaver. So it is with each species in nature, to each his own, and to each his own pattern of living and his own peculiar environment. The nigger taken out of the jungle and transplanted into the middle of a white man's civilization is as much out of his element as a fish out of water. The harm that was done in forcibly tearing a black man away from Africa and transplanting him into the middle of white America was not nearly as great to the nigger himself as in future years it was to the white civilization. The foul act of tearing a black man from the shores of Africa and injecting him into the new world that was to be the future home of the white man was a major catastrophe for white civilization. It planted the seeds for the future disintegration of a great and beautiful civilization that was flowering in the new world. And who was it that indulged in the slave trade almost to a monopoly? Why, it was the Jew in overwhelming numbers, carrying on one of his favorite rackets, that of dealing in human flesh for a profit. The Jew has been famous for indulging in the slave trade not only for centuries, but for thousands of years. In fact, he was indulging in one of his prime activities, that of dealing in human commodities, or should we say, subhuman commodities, and commercializing on it at the same time. In so doing, he was furthering his master plan in two ways. One, he was making money and thereby strengthening his financial monopoly, and two, he was implanting the black jungle blood of Africa into the veins of white America where it could fester and grow until it would finally destroy white America. If we are to save ourselves from the black scourge here in America, we must first of all redirect the thinking of the white man. We must destroy the shameful lie that all men are created equal. We must not only again make the white man aware of his great heritage and his wonderful gift of blood, but we must make the idea of racial purity the first and foremost passion of our new creed. We must therefore make every man, woman, and child realize the immensity of the gulf that exists between the great white civilization, the great white race, versus the black inhabitants of the jungle. We must make them realize that there is a far greater gap between the great intellect of our leading white geniuses and that of the nigger than there is between the nigger and the next highest ape. We must guard our precious bloodlines at all costs. Therefore, when we think of the black man, we must think of his natural habitat being that of the jungle of Africa. We must realize and think of him as a creature whose natural level of existence is more closely related to that of animals than it is to the great and high civilization of the white race. We must counteract the Jew propaganda that is poisoning the minds and the natural instincts of the white people. We can best do this by looking at the nigger for what he is, by thinking of him in terms of hostility and contempt. We must never refer to him in such a respectful term as Negro or African American, but heap contempt and derision upon his head and call him what he is at all times, a nigger. Our proper attitude towards the nigger at all times must be one of hostility and contempt. We must speed the day when we are ready to expel this racial poison from the body of white America. In order to do this, we must reorient the white man's thinking until he is ready to do the job that he should have done a long time ago, and that is to cleanse America of the black poison that is within us, forcibly, if necessary. Ship the nigger back to Africa from whence he was torn. That's the polite term. As I have stated repeatedly, the white man's main problem is not overcoming the black man or even a perfidious Jew. The main problem is to straighten out the white man's thinking and get him back to sanity. Once we have accomplished that much, the rest of the battle will be child's play. Once we have restored the white man's sanity to where his natural instincts will again be performing in accordance with nature's laws, the battle will be as good as won. The white man, brought back to sanity and freed from the clutches of Jew propaganda, is the most powerful force on the face of the earth. In fact, the white man, united and organized, is 10 times more powerful than all the rest of humanity put together. It is the objective of this book to bring about this situation. When the Jews dragged the black man from the shores of Africa and planted him on American soil, they already had integrated into their master plan the means of using the black blood of Africa to destroy the burgeoning white civilization in the New World. Not only was the trading in slaves highly profitable to the Jews, but 300 years ago, he already knew how he was going to use this African poison to destroy the white race. During the aftermath of the Civil War, the Jew launched a tremendous power drive to mongrelize the white blood of the South. In this, he failed, mainly due to the rallying battle of the Ku Klux Klan. By the 1880s, the southern states had driven the nigger from power and reclaimed his courts, legislatures, and government. In the early 1900s, the Jew launched a new program for mongrelization of the white man under the guise of the Communist Party. This time it was aimed at the entire United States, with the spearhead being launched from the Deep South. Here is the blueprint as laid down by Jew Israel Cohen in his book entitled A Racial Program for the 20th Century. And here's a quote. "We must realize that our party's most powerful weapon is racial tension. By propounding into the consciousness of the dark races that for centuries they have been oppressed by the whites, we can mold them to the program of the Communist Party. In America, we will aim for subtle victory. While inflaming a Negro minority against the whites, we will endeavor to instill in the whites a guilt complex for their exploitation of the niggers. We will aid the Negroes to rise in prominence in every walk of life, in the professions and in the world of sports and entertainment. With this prestige, the Negro will be able to intermarry with the whites and begin a process which will deliver America to our cause." Those were the words of stinking Jew Israel Cohen. Basically, the program is to instill hatred among the niggers for the whites, the kill whitey obsession, at the same time promote love and brotherhood among the whites, instill a paralyzing guilt complex in the whites to the point they would do anything to placate the nigger. With government, money, and the weapons of propaganda in the hands of the Jews, the battle is on. A ferocious onslaught is being made by the Jews to mongrelize the races in America in this generation. Everything possible has already been done to mix and integrate housing, but even this is not fast enough. The Jews know that in order to get interracial marriages accepted and get them in progress, they have to start with the school children at an early age. In order to do this, they have done everything possible to push and promote the abominable crime of forced busing of our school children, although this is completely contrary to the Constitution, completely contrary even to the vicious civil rights laws that have been passed in the 1960s. The Jewish judges everywhere have handed down verdicts of forced busing. To anybody in their right mind, these verdicts are the most vicious, abominable, hideous crimes that anybody could possibly dream up. Nevertheless, with the sugarcoating and smoothing over by the Jew-directed news media and propaganda networks, they have made it seem almost reasonable. The result is that the white school boards and county governments have shamefully abdicated their duty to their electors and to their citizens. They have bowed to these scoundrels of Jew judges. Not only have they bowed to them, but in a most abject and shameful manner, have kowtowed to them. The consequence of this abomination is clear to everyone. Schools have become hotbeds of crime, of knifings, of beatings, of lawlessness, and anarchy, and rape. The Jewish press blandly goes on its way and acts as if, well, there are inconveniences, but my, look at the rewards. We must make the Constitution work. We must make equal opportunity for everyone. What garbage. The obvious facts stand out that none of these idiotic arguments are valid. bussing little black savages into white neighborhoods, and conversely, bussing innocent little white children into the crime-ridden blackboard jungles of the nigger districts has not achieved any of these so-called noble objectives. The fact is that the schools have downgraded education for both the blacks and the whites. There are not any longer even semblances of educational institutions, but crime-ridden penal colonies. There are slave labor camps in which our lamentable white children are the victims of a heinous Jew crime. Even the dirty black niggers don't want to have their children bussed. But a few of the Jew-promoted black spokesmen act like this is a must so they can get equal opportunities. In all cases, it is the Jew-financed and controlled legal defense fund, always with some Jew kike lawyer at its head, that brings suits before the courts before a Jew judge. This Jew judge then hands down an almost unbelievably ridiculous verdict, forcing large-scale busing of white children into the jungles of the black territories and the fierce little black animals into white suburbs. A great deal of opposition has sprung up. It must be our objective to capitalize on such opposition, organize it, and introduce these white racial comrades to our new creed. In Pontiac, Michigan, for instance, a group of white parents calling themselves a National Action Group has organized boycotts that kept 35% of Pontiac's white children home on the first day of school. Immediately, the Jew-controlled police were put into action to make sure that those few white traitors that violated this boycott were protected to the hilt to try and break these boycotts. The slogan of the white group was, "Bus judges, not children." Probably a better slogan would be, "Boating, not busing." The implication of this slogan, of course, is that we should put the niggers on boats and send them back to Africa instead of busing our poor, innocent children. It is rather ironical that the most determined opposition to busing has come not from white people and from the white parents who have the most to lose, but from the Chinese racial group in San Francisco. Although they live in a country that is not their own and a country in which they are a small minority, these Chinese mongoloids at least have enough racial loyalty and enough racial pride to stick together. Outwardly, they claim that their concern is that the children will lose a part of the close-knit community's ancient cultural heritage. However, one Chinese-American teacher admits, at least that is what they say to you. But if you could speak Chinese, you would learn they just don't want their children going to school with blacks. Even the colored Chinese, whose cultural heritage is much less than that of the magnificent white race, have enough racial solidarity and loyalty to stick together and know when they are being debauched and debased by mixing with a bunch of inferior black animals. As this is being written, at least 3,000 Chinese children were still boycotting the schools in San Francisco. In reading the reviews about the so-called problems of busing, such Jew propaganda pieces as Time Magazine, Life Magazine, and others present the picture as, yes, there is a problem, but we will overcome all these obstacles and everybody will be better off, and an endless collection of similar drivel. The cunning Jew never argues the question, is busing really good for our country? Is it really achieving any positive results? It is always presented in a manner that, of course, everybody knows that we need to have integration. Everybody is agreed that this is a highly desirable objective. All the while he is preaching this kind of monstrous lie, the Jew knows very well what he is doing. He knows that it is completely devastating and ruining our public schools, for which the white parents are paying tremendous sums of money in taxation. He knows that the net results of this operation will be a mongrelization of the blacks and whites in the next generation, and that it will pull down, degrade, and debauch, destroy, and mongrelize the white race. All this time, he is deceitfully promoting the idea on a seemingly most high-level plane, as if this were the American dream, as if this were the law of the land, as if this is what our founding fathers meant by the term democracy. They are vigorously promoting the idea that if we could only have this country's race integrated, everything would be just lovely and a whole flood of similar criminal propaganda. Let's just examine some of these treacherous and fallacious ideas that the Jews are putting forth and promoting. Let's look at the claim that this is the law of the land. In the first place, nowhere in the Constitution is it stated or even implied that schools must be integrated. According to the 10th Amendment, which plainly states that all other rights not delegated to the federal government are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people, there is no question that schools and education are completely outside of the prerogative and jurisdiction of the federal government. It belongs wholly within the jurisdiction of the state governments and the county governments. Furthermore, the Founding Fathers never did consider race mixing as a constitutional right. In fact, most of the Founding Fathers who wrote the Constitution were themselves owners of slaves, including such people as Jefferson, George Washington, and others, who did not necessarily write the Constitution, but were rightly considered as our Founding Fathers. They never did consider the black niggers as being the equal of the white founders of this nation. They considered them all as chattel property, who were given neither rights of citizenship nor were they given any voting rights. For these Jew propagandists now to prattle that it was the will of the Founding Fathers that we should forcefully mix the races and bus our white children about like a bunch of cattle is a foul lie of the most lowest order. Let us further consider that fallacious Jew argument that this is the law of the land. Even the most vicious laws that the Jew-controlled Congress has passed in the last decades does not state anywhere that our children must be bussed about like a bunch of cattle in order to achieve racial mixture and integration. In fact, the notorious and vicious civil rights laws of the 1960s specifically state that federal funds cannot in any case be used for busing to achieve racial integration. For these contemptible Jew judges now to come along and say that this is the law of the land is a lie, and a vicious, contemptible lie at that. It is neither embodied in the Constitution, nor is it the law of the land. In fact, even as far back as 1896, the Supreme Court ruled that separate but equal facilities were constitutional. And in all our past Anglo-Saxon jurisprudence, it has always been an established axiom that once a decision was handed down, that future decisions would be governed thereby. The presently Jew-controlled Supreme Court has raped and violated this established jurisprudence and stakes out decisions that are in complete violation of precedent, in complete violation of the laws passed by Congress, and in complete violation of the Constitution itself. In any case, I say to you, white brothers and white sisters, even if such a vicious code was the law of the land, was embedded in the Constitution, and had been accepted by our courts, there is a higher law that supersedes all these, and that is the law of survival. There comes a time when the highest law of nature must be invoked by whatever means available, and this law is the law of preservation of your own species. It is therefore one of the holiest causes to which we can dedicate ourselves to expel this black racial poison from out of our national bloodstream, to ship the niggers back to Africa, that's the polite term, as quickly as possible, and cleanse and keep pure our racial integrity. We must point out again and again to our white racial comrades the horrible facts of present-day history. Namely, in 1920, the white race was outnumbered only 2-1 in the world. Today, it is outnumbered 7-1. And the Jew United Nations gleefully predicts that in another 20 years, we will be outnumbered 49-1. by the hostile colored hordes. It does not take a great deal of imagination as to what the fate of the white race will be when the colored, agitated and controlled by Jews, have enough physical power to slaughter us. The facts of history and the facts of nature are plain. The white race must dominate the earth or miserably perish at the hands of the inferior coloreds. The first step in a white man's struggle to save himself must be made right here in America, and that first step is to expel the niggers from our midst and ship them back to Africa. It must not be our objective to help the nigger improve himself. We have no interest whatsoever in improving and assimilating the nigger into our white society. It is the most stupid thing we could possibly do. The only thing niggers produce when they get outside help is more niggers. The only answer is boating. Ship them out. This is the only real solution. There's one other. When it comes to implementing the real solution of the nigger problem in America, namely that of shipping the niggers back to Africa, people generally parrot two starkly negative answers implanted in their brains by Jew propaganda. A, how can we possibly afford it? And B, yes, it would be the sensible thing to do, but you'll never get the American people to do it. Both attitudes, A and B, are, of course, intensely negative, just as the Jew tailored them to be. He is promoting these ideas along the lines of a sound maxim as old as the strategy of warfare itself. Namely, if you can get your enemies to think they are defeated before the battle starts, then they are as good as defeated. Let us examine, A, can we afford it? And the answer is so overwhelmingly yes, we can. In fact, we can't afford not to
do it.
Practically all normal white people in the U.S. agree that the niggers do not fit into our society. Most are aware of the facts of life, that niggers cause 85% of all crimes of violence, despite the fact that they reputedly only constitute 12 to 13% of the population, that most of the welfare money is going to niggers, that welfare is becoming an ever-increasingly expensive burden, taking increasingly greater amounts of our earnings each year, that the inner core of practically all the large cities in the U.S. are rotting from the effects of the nigger problem, that school busing and mongrelization are a frightening evil caused by the niggers in our midst. Most normal white Americans are aware of this fact, and with the exception of the idiotic hypocrites in our midst, the average American is well aware that our racial policy is going to destroy our country, our race, and our nation. Nevertheless, the idea of taking 30 million niggers and transporting them back across the ocean to the continent from which their ancestors were torn seems somewhat staggering to them. Again, this is so because the Jew has implemented these negative ideas in their minds. However, when we consider this on the basis of economics and racial logic, it is the best bargain we could possibly buy for ourselves if we did ship them over to Africa as quickly as possible. Let's look at the figures. Now, these are outdated, but I'm still going to read them. If we assume that we were to ship every one of the 30 million blacks back to Africa and even sent them over in style at a cost of $1,000 per head, the total sum would come to only $30 billion. A fraction of the total U.S. national budget for only 1 year. And this would be only a one-time expense. How can we afford it? For one thing, we could take all the money now being wasted on foreign aid to countries which hate and despise us and spend it on transporting American niggers back to Africa. We could take all the money that we are now wasting on breeding and proliferating niggers in this country today, niggers that are polluting our race with the black blood of Africa, and use the money to ship these niggers back to Africa. When you think of all the increasing billions and billions that are being spent on hundreds of idiotic welfare programs to breed and proliferate blacks, money being spent on foreign aid, money being spent on armaments that are not really defending us at all, and all the rest of the $200 billion a year plus in the budget that for the largest part is being entirely wasted and being appropriated by the Jew, we come to the conclusion that the question has been entirely misstated. I just wanted to add at this point that the dollar amounts, well, you're aware, he wrote the book was published in 1973, and of course the figures have changed. But the things that he said, I believe, still apply, that we cannot not afford to send them back, or to get rid of them anyway. There's other solutions that will have to be considered. It should be, how can we afford to keep the niggers here? How can we afford to keep coming up with billions and billions for one black handout program after another, year after year after year, with no end in sight? With all the billions now being poured out for black welfare, black crime, black capitalism, and black slum programs, we could have shipped this alien black population back to Africa dozens of times over. As to part B, that the American people will never do it, this becomes the more difficult part of the program. It is here that we need an intensive program of re-educating, not so much the blacks, but re-educating the whites. It is entirely a matter of willpower. Again, it is a matter of straightening out the white man's thinking. If we have the will to live, the will to survive, we must and shall have the will to reject and to repel the pollution and proliferation of the black blood from our national white body. When we look at recent history, we find that the Jew had no particular compunction about driving 14 million Germans from their native soil in Prussia and East Germany, land they had occupied for the last several thousand years, and driving them westward. Nor did the Jews feel particularly conscience-stricken when they drove 1.5 million Arabs from their native lands in Palestine and appropriated all their farms and property and left the Arabs to starve out in a hot, dry desert. Why should we Americans, who evidently
have
no compunction about killing millions of our white brothers in Germany during World Wars I and II, of bombing Hamburg and killing 50,000 men, women, and children in one night, of firebombing Dresden and killing 300,000 of our white brethren there, why should we suddenly be struck dumb with tenderness when it comes to dealing with the nigger problem? Certainly the niggers are a real and present threat to our survival, which the Germans are not and never were. In fact, approximately 30% of all white Americans have German blood in their veins, and it was, of course, one of the great travesties of history that we should have ever taken up arms against the courageous Germans, a people who were fighting our battle against the Jew for us and all white mankind. We are only quoting history to show that the problem of shipping the niggers back to Africa is neither an economic problem nor really a problem of morals, but purely a problem of racial attitude. Once we get our thinking straight, the problem of shipping the niggers back to Africa is as good as solved. When we think of how many niggers we could ship over there by employing a fleet of 747s, or even, as in wartime, using Liberty ships, which we could build in short order, it can readily be seen that the economic and physical problem is no problem at all. We can do it. We must do it. We can't afford not to do it. I repeat, the real problem is to get our thinking straightened out, and that is what this book and the Creativity Religion is all about. And the key to straightening out the white man's thinking is propaganda and enlightenment, organization and more propaganda. Remember, organized and united, the white race is 10 times as powerful as all the other races combined. It is towards achieving this exalted and lofty goal that this book is dedicated. It is the predominant aim of our new religion to achieve this magnificent goal. Have a good night.
Thank you.